enough about him. What is he? He's a winner. That's what he is. He's a flat-out winner.
I thought the curse of the Bambino doesn't start till September.
It's on like a mother.
The WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, going to get to my man Tyler Dunn here. He is an NFL features writer at Bleacher Report. You've heard him here on WGR plenty of times. You've read his outstanding work online as well. Tyler, good afternoon. Good to talk to you again, my man. How you been?
Doing well, Sal. How have you been? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, I'm doing pretty well. You know, the season's over, so I actually have to kind of, you know, I don't like when the season ends, people always say, oh, now you have so much time to yourself. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do every day, though? Like, I don't have anywhere to go.
I know. It's you become regimented just like everybody else involved with an NFL team, right? Well, hey, you can catch up on life a little bit, right?
Yeah, I try to. You know, it's good to spend time with my son. He started learning to skate this morning, so I got to get the update when I get home. I think it started off well. It didn't end well, if you know what I mean. But I think that, you know, as long as he's back in and ready to go next week, then that's what I care about.
I like it. Start him young, maybe teach him a good hip check, a little floor check, you know, get a little aggression, a little violence going.
I think he's going to be a lover, not a fighter. He is definitely not the aggressive type, but that's okay. I always say he's going to be a long snapper, Tyler. That's what I'm going to do, is make him a long snapper.
Well, you've got the video tutorial.
That's right.
Did you show him that yet?
I didn't. We're going to do that, though, because I'm like, dude, you never have to hit anybody. You just have to, as long as you can run a little bit and, you know, go downfield, and you could play probably for 15 years and make a few million dollars. Why? It's like the best gig in the world. Like Reed Ferguson, I tell him all the time, dude, you have the best gig in the world. Come on, no one gets to hit you. No one gets to touch you ever, and you get to make lots and lots of money playing in the NFL.
It's so true. You just hope that you don't, you know, he doesn't get into a playoff game with everything on the line and has one high snap that causes,
right,
you know, psychological trauma for the rest of his life. You don't want that.
No,
you run the risk of that.
Then you'd be the GOAT forever. So I had Josh Reed in here from Channel 4. You and I both know Josh well, and he was in here a little bit earlier today, and we started off today because he lost his phone this morning. He got it back, but it was dead or something like that. But then we started getting the conversation. I want to ask you, what is the more helpless feeling, losing your phone or losing your wallet?
Oh, man. I'm going to say losing the wallet, because you've got credit cards.
And, yep.
You know, you got to go through each one to cancel. That there's a hassle involved there. I think the phone would be, couldn't you just call Verizon or somebody and just shut that off quick? And plus, I mean, we're all so addicted to our phones, it's pathetic. I almost would welcome that at some point in life. Just take this away, please.
But in our business, not having a phone, it's like anxiety. I mean, it's crazy because you think you're going to miss some sort of news that comes over or something.
Yeah, I mean, you got all the contacts in the phone. I don't really know how clouds and all that work, so maybe things are backed up.
Who the heck knows?
But you're right. I mean, it's pretty It's just bad that it's got to this point, I guess, in 2019, that we are so reliant on this stupid little device. I've always said, like, I really would have no problem if Twitter, Instagram, Facebook just spontaneously combusted and ceased to exist. That'd be a great thing.
Tyler, before I get into the playoff games this weekend and the hires, you spent time in Green Bay. You covered the Packers. Were you there when they did everything with the stadium, when they had all the renovations, or was that before?
That would, you know, it's been a few different stages. I guess the latest one is when I was there, but, yeah, I mean, I definitely remember, when it was the old Lambeau. I mean,
right,
I went out there a few times, you know, back in middle school with my dad, actually. We'd go,
yep,
to a game every year as a Packer fan growing up. So can definitely remember when it was the old Bowl and the monstrosity title town USA owned zip code that it is now.
So we're obviously going through this phase here now, the exploratory,
right,
phase of New Era Field and for that matter KeyBank Center, and, you know, renovating that. But where do you stand on, you know, what would be better for the Bills, as someone who has seen this firsthand for all the games you went to when you were younger? You covered the Packers, you saw what it's like now. You know, Buffalo is a small market. It's not as small as Green Bay, but I think they're very similar in that regard. What do you think is the best course of action here as far as either renovating kind of the way they did it in Green Bay, or even maybe just going all in on something new here in Buffalo?
Man, I love that question, because I'm sure Terry and Kim Pegula are thinking about that as we speak, right?
I mean, everybody was just emailed that survey, and it was, I don't know if you took it, but it's very specific. It asked a lot of questions about how much you would spend if it was new, how much you would spend if it's retro. I mean, it's very interesting, the survey they put out.
Definitely. And you can bet that they're talking to Mark Murphy, the Packers president, all about this to figure out the best course of action because, I mean, the two situations are so similar. Green Bay is, you know, a population of 100, 120,000, and the stadium holds, what, 80,000? So you're talking about the entire town in a
right.
stadium where, you know, but Buffalo kind of faces a lot of the same challenges. I think overall you want to capitalize on history, tradition. That's what the Packers have done so well. I mean, they have, you know, restaurants and bars. I mean, their own Hall of Fame that you can visit, the stadium tours. They add an outdoor field that you can anybody can just walk on and play on, a snow tube hill. I mean, they did all of this, creating their own little village, and it's really not in, quote-unquote, downtown Green Bay. It's, you know, 10, 15 minutes away, which would be kind of similar to this, right? I think the Bills could absolutely do something like that in Orchard Park and expand. You have all of the room, all the acreage to kind of build your own little district if you want. But then again, you know, I get the allure of downtown and the revitalization there, and the Pegulas have been involved. I mean, they're the reason that it is a different downtown. I mean, absolutely. So they know what they could capitalize on there. It's a tough call. I don't really know which way you go, to be honest.
Well, did it, if you look back at the renovations, does it feel like it's a new stadium when you walk in Green Bay? Because I know that they did a lot on the outside. Would you like they have now they have the enclosed like areas where they have the bars and the restaurants inside. When you walk in, you're like, yeah, it feels like it's new, which is so you don't need to make a new one and spend even more money. Or do you feel like when you do it now and you go there, do you feel like, you know what, they probably should have just sprung for the extra 400 grand or 500 grand or, I'm sorry, million, 500 million, and, you know, and built something new. I mean, do you get that feeling?
No, it definitely feels new, for sure.
Okay.
And it definitely feels old because, I mean, if you buy a ticket and watch a game, you're still on the aluminum seating, you know, you're jam-packed when you've got 10 layers on. It's very old school in that regard, but then they built it north, you know, with the luxury boxes and all of that you have to compete, I guess, in today's NFL. So, I mean, they preserved the bowl. They built around it. There's still a lot of stuff to do around the bowl, you know, with the
yep.
Lombardi and Lambeau and Favre and Reggie White, all the tradition. You see the portraits everywhere. I think there's definitely a template they could follow if they wanted to right there.
All right, speaking of the Packers, they hired Matt LaFleur as their new head coach. As someone who has covered Aaron Rodgers extensively, how will this go over and what will that dynamic be like? Do you like this hire for the Packers?
I like any team that's trying to stay at the cutting edge of offense in today's NFL. And I know that, you know, a lot of these hires have gotten a lot of criticism in the NFL. And it seems like, you know, if you ever talk to Sean McVay at any point of your life, you're a coaching candidate. But there's a reason for that. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, for example, I mean, he was around Mahomes, Mayfield, you know, Case Keenum before that. He was around a lot of these guys in college. He's thinking 2, 3, 4 moves ahead. The Packers with Matt LaFleur, I mean, they're trying to do that. I mean, he was around McVay. He was around Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. He's a young, bright, offensive-minded head coach, which they need that perspective. I mean, it got so stale with Mike McCarthy. I mean, you watch a Packers game, I mean, nobody's even going in motion before the snap. I mean, there's no misdirection. It's almost like the defense knew what routes were being run before the ball was even snapped, so you can get Aaron Rodgers' frustration. And trust me, he was very, very frustrated, not just this year, but I'd say 3 to 4 years before. Things really went south for Green Bay with that 2014 NFC Championship game, when they blew that lead to Seattle and Mike
yep.
McCarthy kicked 2 chip shot field goals in the first half, wasn't aggressive. It really went south from there. So he had to go. But you still need a coach that's going to challenge Aaron Rodgers. You still need Aaron Rodgers to respect the head coach. There was none of that last year. I don't know if they have that yet. I guess time will tell.
Is Mike McCarthy a good coach?
I think so. I think he's, you know, he was really one of the early coaches responsible for, you know, developing Aaron Rodgers. Remember, when he came in, the ball's
yep.
way up by his ear. He had that funky delivery. So he was responsible through his quarterback school, that he calls it, to really get him going in the NFL in the first place. And he squeezed out an MVP-worthy season out of Brett Favre before that. I just think that he never really evolved. He never really developed with the game's trends. They had a GM that didn't evolve. I mean, the game passed Ted Thompson by. He was trying to draft and develop players instead of signing veterans that they needed come playoff time, and that really cost them. So you kind of add it all up, Sal, and it's kind of sad because they really wasted Aaron Rodgers' prime. Yep. But also, I mean, Rodgers is to blame too. I mean, he was far from perfect this year. I think, you know, you can question some of his leadership tactics. I don't know if guys really rallied around this guy the past couple of years. So it's just a big old mess there. And, hey, Rodgers is 34, 35. Who's to say? I mean, he might only have 3-4 years of his peak left, so they better hustle and sign some bets.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I'm looking at Arizona, and they hire Cliff Kingsbury, and look, I get it. What you just said is right. I don't disagree with, you know, cutting edge, offensive-minded, young guy. We see what's happening with a lot of these teams, you know, with the Rams and what they're doing, of course, with Sean McVay. We see a lot of that, but, you know, I think in some respects, maybe we've jumped the shark here, too, because this guy has never been a coach at any capacity in the NFL. And he was a failing college coach as far as his record. Now, I know you can't get kids all in to go to Lubbock all the time when you're recruiting against a lot of the schools that you have to recruit against. But, boy, I don't know. I just think maybe we've gone a little bit too far in this regard when Cliff Kingsbury is getting a head coaching job in 2019.
You might be right. I mean, hey, I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. And, hey, maybe you have to go the more CEO route, you know, just a head coach who just knows how to lead, to squeeze every ounce of potential in players and just be that quote-unquote coach. I mean, you do see that. I mean, that's probably what Bill Belichick's better at than anything he's drawn up on a whiteboard, you know? But I don't know. I just think it's such an offensive game.
Yep.
And every offseason, you're going to have 2, 3, 4 rule changes. They're going to keep making it that offensive game that you better have a coach who is going to be thinking ahead and try new things and isn't going to get caught like Mike McCarthy was in Green Bay, where it's this prehistoric kind of passing game. I mean, things are changing so fast, and it's changing into the game you see in college. I mean, it's going that air raid direction. I mean, that's just what you need out of a coach, out of a play caller. And I think that it's just different. I know he had a losing record at Texas Tech. That's not a good look. He was fired, for crying out loud. But it's just different. I mean, you're competing against the Alabamas, the Clemsons, all those schools in the Big 12. It's about recruiting. It's about, you know, everything behind the scenes. It's just a different game. He doesn't have to play that kind of game in the NFL. It's more structured with a salary cap. He'll be able to compete. He has a good young quarterback right now. I like it. I like them taking a risk.
All right, it should be interesting, and it will be fun to watch. There's no doubt about that. Tyler Dunn joining me from Bleacher Report here on the Western Hotline, WGR Sports Talk Saturday. All right, let's get into these games this weekend, Tyler. I just had a guest on a little while ago, Seren Petro from Kansas City, and we were talking about how this playoff win drought at home has really kind of been consuming them, kind of much like the actual playoff drought consumed us here in Buffalo, where all we did was talk about it. The last time the Chiefs won a home playoff game, Joe Montana was the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. They have played 6 of them. They've lost every one of them. The Colts go there today. How much pressure is on Patrick Mahomes and especially Andy Reid to try to win this game?
Boy, so Patrick Mahomes wasn't even born then, right?
I know, right? Amazing.
it really is. So I don't think he cares. You know, I think it's – I don't even know if Andy Reid cares about that. It just seems new and fresh in Kansas City that – yeah, you would think that pressure's on them as a team. I mean, this is a team that could win the Super Bowl, and they've got that hanging over their heads. But I just love them in this matchup. I know the Colts are red hot. Andrew Luck's playing as well as anybody. They'll be able to score well against the Chiefs, you would think. But you give Andy Reid a week to work with. We all know how good he is coming out of the bye, whether it's the regular season or the playoffs. You know, Patrick Mahomes having one of the best seasons in NFL history. It's hard to bet against the Chiefs. And yeah, I know everybody around here, those of us, Sammy Watkins, but it seems like it's a constant battle for him. It sounds like he's going to play. Even if he's a decoy and he's on the field, that is huge for them because you can't load up and have that safety help over the top on Tyreek Hill every play. It could bust Tyreek Hill loose open for 1 or 2 big plays just if Sammy Watkins is on the field.
Tonight, the Cowboys go to the Rams in what will virtually be a home game in L.A. for the Dallas Cowboys. This is actually a good matchup, I think, for the Cowboys because they can obviously run the ball well. The Rams have had struggles stopping the run, but, of course, they have that potent offense. How do you see this game?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if the Cowboys can run the ball well, if they can play with a lead, their defense is good enough to beat anybody. I mean, we saw it. They took down the Saints. So they have a shot in this game with a quote-unquote home field advantage. Just hard to bet against Sean McVay in this moment. I think with him getting an extra week and the Rams getting healthier, it sounds like Todd Gurley's knee issues aren't really issues anymore. I still like the Rams because, I mean, I don't think you can contain them for four quarters with such a bright offensive mind, you know, pushing the buttons. And they learned from last year. I mean, I was out there a couple weeks ago talking to guys. I think that's still on their mind, the way that they lost to the Falcons with the wild card. They knew they weren't ready in every possible way. I think that this year they are ready, at least for this game.
Chargers, Patriots tomorrow. Everybody in Buffalo's rooting for the LA Chargers, I think. They have a chance here. We have starting to see some cracks in the Patriots armor, but how do you see this one playing out in the cold and snowy what appears to be Foxborough tomorrow?
Right, and Rivers looks pretty good in the cold, you know, a few weeks back against the Chiefs. I think that was like low 20s. It wasn't necessarily a bright and sunny LA kind of game for him, so he can play in any conditions. With the Patriots, it just seems like they kind of stay a few steps ahead in their own unique way. They're almost coming full circle and the way the dynasty started with running the ball really well, playing great defense, and Tom Brady just making those two, three, four critical third down throws a game for them to get a win. I mean, they kind of found themselves late in the season with running the ball with Sony Michel, James White leaking out of the backfield, that new age Kevin Fault kind of weapon. And I know Gronk is pretty much washed up at this point, but they have other guys. I mean, Julian Edelman's still around. Chris Hogan's still around. Philip Dorsett's coming on, and that defense has played really well. They've been really opportunistic. So, you know, at home, it's hard to beat Tom Brady. You know, give me the Patriots in this game.
Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles go to the New Orleans Saints. Last game of the weekend, who wins?
You know, just for the sake of being a contrarian, let's go with St. Nick, right?
Wow. Like,
well,
that would
not?
Be interesting. No, hey, man, he could do it. It would be interesting if he does, too.
It's weird. I mean, they've got some kind of magic mojo working right now. It's like last year all over again. Everything completely changed when he took over. It's hard to explain because I think anybody would take Carson Wentz over Nick Foles, but, I mean, here you got Nick Foles, the best quarterback in the NFL against the blitz. The Saints like the blitz. He could have a couple big plays downfield that change this game. So their confidence is going to be sky high. I mean, they absolutely feel like this is deja vu in every possible way.
Tyler, before I let you go, ultimate question for you today. Are you ready? Who from the mid-90s Charlotte Hornets would guard James Harden if they played today?
Oh, man. I'm always glad when you get these Hornet questions in, Sal. Thanks so much.
I know you love your Hornets. I have to appease you with the Hornets question.
I love it. You know what? Let's go with Vlade Divac. You know, the Hornets with a shrewd trade, trading away Kobe Bryant
yes.
for Vlade on draft day. You need that veteran savvy up front. And you know why? Because he'll flop. I know James Harden's a flopper. Hey, Vlade was the flopper of all floppers back in the 90s. He really revolutionized it. So give me Vlade in that scenario.
All right. No, you're not going to go with Steph's dad, Del Curry?
No. I think he was just a spot-up shooter. You know, we'll just pack him away in the corner, let him do his thing, and we'll let Vlade take a charge.
Now, I'm not hardcore Lakers guy, but I am a Lakers fan. I grew up a Lakers fan. I'm glad, I'm thrilled that LeBron is there. I try to catch them when I can. I don't totally get into it all the time. Is he going to win an NBA championship in LA, you think?
Oh, man, I don't think so. He's had an MVP-worthy season, it seems, but they just they're still so young. They need that second star, and if we've learned anything the last few years, you better have two or three legit stars to win it all. I don't think he has it yet.
Could we see a championship up in Toronto this year?
We might, Sal. Holy cow.
They're good, man. They're really, the really good.
NFL, NBA.
Right. They're really good, man.
Yeah. They are. It's going to be fascinating, too, because, they're the best team in the NBA or arguably one of, and Kawhi Leonard might leave after this year, so they're going to do everything in their power. Kind of like the Thunder with Paul George, you know, last year. They want to keep him long-term. It didn't seem like Paul George was going to stay with the Thunder long-term, but maybe all this winning and everything kind of convinces Kawhi to stick around, and the Raptors are here to stay. Why don't they have a few games in Buffalo, by the way?
I would love that.
Just a couple.
I would love that. That'd be amazing. I'd love to go up in there and see them. I know I've said that, and now they're really good. It's a little tougher, but I'd love that. Isn't it crazy, though, in the Eastern Conference? Think about the three markets that are in the top three spots. Toronto, of course, they're a big market, but they're in Canada. Doesn't resonate like it does in the United States, obviously. Then Milwaukee, then Indiana. If somehow Denver got to the finals out of the West, which they are the number one team right now, If they played one of those three teams, the NBA would hate that. They would hate that.
I know. I know. Wouldn't that be great, though?
Like, yes. It'd be great for us. I'd love it.
Especially with every year, it just seems like these small market teams have no shot because of the star building.
Right.
And, you know, LeBron went to L.A., you know, in part because he wants to get involved with entertainment and do movies and shows. It'd be awesome if it was just Milwaukee, Denver.
I'd love it. Oh, my gosh. Milwaukee, Denver, NBA Finals. Hey, buddy, enjoy today. It's a big football weekend, obviously, so a lot going on, and we look forward to not only reading from you but hearing from you again. Don't be a stranger here, okay?
Anytime, Sal. Hey, thanks so much, man. Great catching up again.
Okay, you too. Happy New Year to you, Tyler.
You too.
All right, Tyler Dunn from Bleacher Report joining me right there. You can follow him on Twitter, at Ty Dunn, D-U-N-N-E. We got Paul Hamilton coming up here right after the break. Sabres and Lightning tonight down from the arena, 7 o'clock. Is the face-off, 6 o'clock, Paul William Bell's pregame show on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That is the music for my man Paul Hamilton back in town for tonight's game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course, we'll have it right here for you on WGR Sports Radio 550. Pregame beginning at 6 p.m. The Lightning, of course, I mean, you know, statistically best team in the league, but just all that talent they bring, and not a good time for the Sabres after losing last night to the Carolina Hurricanes down in Carolina. Hi, Paul. Good afternoon to you. Welcome back.
Sal, how are you?
I'm good. Paul joining me, of course, on the West Hur Hotline. I mean, it just seemed like last night was puck luck all over the place. Bad puck luck, not just for the Sabres, but for the Hurricanes, but maybe especially for the Sabres.
Crazy. When was the last time you saw four goals go in off defensemen?
Unbelievable.
Three off a Sabre defenseman and one off a Carolina Hurricane defenseman. It was crazy. I don't know how you blame goaltenders for that. People try because, you know, that once they get in their minds they hate a goaltender, that's it for that goaltender. I remember Robin Leonard didn't even put a uniform on, and much of the fan base hated him because a number one draft pick was traded for him. And, you know, he never played real well in Ottawa, so he never even got a chance in Buffalo. And then every single goal that would come in, I get the Twitter rush, how bad he is, he stinks. That's his fault. Every goal was his fault. It started. I started wondering if every goal that Johnson let in last year was going to be Leonard's fault too. But and that's where it's getting with Hutton now. It doesn't matter if pucks are deflected. It doesn't matter about how well he plays. You know, the fan base is starting with he lets in a bad one every single game, which isn't right. Every goal is his fault, even though they go in off defensemen. You know, and it just. Once they get it in their heads, they hate a goaltender in this town. That's the end for that goaltender.
Yeah, it seems like you know, he is now feeling a little bit of the wrath there. But is there something to be said for Carter Hutton playing too much right now? This is the most he's really ever played in a particular season. And Linus Olmark has played well when he's been in there.
You could say that. Linus Olmark lost his last start too. My guess is he will be in goal tonight since it's a back-to-back. It wasn't his fault. I mean, he lost his last start in a game that easily could have been, if it wasn't for him, could have been 6-1 instead of 2-1. But he played very well in that game. But there are games Hutton plays well. Recently, you might be able to say that you know, is he playing too much? Because in the recent past is when the goals have gone in that maybe you wanted him to stop, or a goofy goal goes in on him, or, you know, the one that went in off Scandella, if he just catches it, it never gets to Scandella. But it didn't go into his glove right. It popped up in the air, wound up on top of the net, and then bounced off the top of the net and came down. And then Scandella tried to hit it with his stick, and he wound up going in the net. But if he just catches it, it doesn't go in. He's had three experiences behind the net, and he's a very good puck-handling goaltender, one of the best in the NHL. And since these three experiences, he's been fine with handling the puck. But they came in, I don't remember if they're consecutive games or there was one game in between where he got behind the net, mishandled the puck, and wound up in the net. And, you know, he's let in a couple other goofy goals that, you know, weren't going in before. So, yeah, it's possible that maybe the workload is getting to be too much because he has never been a full season number one goaltender. He became St. Louis's number one goaltender for a while last year, but by the end, Jake Allen was back in net.
Right. So I don't have it in front of me. I'm guessing, though, it seemed to me like Jason Pominville's ice time really increased last night. You can tell me if that's right or not, or maybe I just noticed him more. I mean, he had a shift where he pretty much had everything, which was a missed opportunity in the front end and then a really nice play in the back end, and then he drew a penalty. I think it was all in one shift, by the way, but what was behind that with Jason Pominville last night, what appeared to be more ice time, and he also scored a goal, of course.
Yeah, he just it seemed like he was working well with Rodriguez. He had a golden opportunity to score a goal, which is basically from his spot when
yep.
Mittelstadt caused a turnover, and in one swoop caused the turnover and got the puck to an open Pominville pretty much in his office. It was just to the right of the goaltender where he has scored a lot of goals in his career, and he wasn't able to convert on that, and I'm going, geez, boy, is this guy snake-bitten, and that's usually where he'll score goals. But then he got another opportunity from Rodriguez in front of the net, and he just let it fly right away. Again, a place in front of the net where he scored a lot of goals, and McElhinney had no chance on it, and he finally broke through. So that's, you know, coaches get a feel for players during games, and they'll start playing the ones that are going more than the ones that aren't. And I think that probably was the case in yesterday's game.
Well, good for him. I'd like to see Jason Pominville, you know, be able to have more of a role. I don't, you know, it's tough to see a guy that I think is pretty beloved here in Buffalo seem like, you know, not only snake bitten, but his ice time dwindling and things like that. You know, if he can be a contributor on this team, it makes everybody a little bit better, right, Paul? I mean, that's one of the guys when you talk about secondary scoring, that's one of the guys you have to point to.
Sure it is. I mean, you need contributions from some of these guys, and I think the good news is they were three games without Jack Eichel, and they won two of them. In those two wins, they scored 9 goals.
That's
the
right.
Loss was a 2-1 loss in Boston. So in the three games, they scored 10 goals. But in the two wins, they scored 9 goals. And, you know, Skinner had 3 of those 9, but then the other guys were there. There was Thompson, and there was Reinhardt, and there was Smith, and there was Mittelstadt, and there was McCabe, and there was Pilot. You know, guys that got on. Johan Larson's starting to get on the board a little bit more. I mean, in the beginning of the year, his defense was fine, but he wasn't contributing on offense at all. And as we're talking, I'm looking. He has 2 goals and an assist. He has 3 points in his last 3, 6, 8 games. So that's for him is chipping in. That's what you need from him. You don't need 20 goals from Johan Larson, but you need him to chip into the offense. And his line spends an awful lot of time in the offensive zone because they're so tenacious on the forecheck, and they get in there and they drive the other team crazy. And now that, you know, maybe he can get on the board a little bit, whether it's an assist or a goal, that's what you need. Just chip in a little bit to augment what you're doing with the penalty kill and on defense.
How do you think Jack fared in his first game on the ice in 11 days, basically?
He felt he was a little rusty. He felt it. He thought he could be better. So I think, you know, he's got one game in now. I asked him how he felt injury-wise, and he didn't even say anything. He was more concerned about, you know, his timing was off a little bit. I know there were a couple of shots from that left circle that wound up going over that. The one time in the power play, he had a long time with the puck, and he got himself all set up right where he wanted to be to let the shot fly. I think he had the corner, and he shot it over the net. So those are the little things that when you don't play for a bit, you know, that you just got to sharpen up, and that's what he said. He just felt like he wasn't as sharp as he could be.
Paul Hamilton here on the West Hur Hotline. Sabres Lightning tonight down from KeyBank Center. That's a 7 p.m. faceoff, 6 p.m. pregame here on WGR. You mentioned his play a little while ago when he had the turnover and found Pominville. I'm starting to see a little bit of a positive turn in Casey Mittelstadt. Looks like he's just making a few extra little plays here and there, Paul. Am I wrong when I see that?
Well, the coaching staff for a little bit now has reduced his ice time, and I think that was get your breath, kid. It's kind of not going real well for you here. We're gonna pull you back a little bit. We're still gonna throw you out here. I mean, you know, but we're gonna pull you back a little bit and just take a breath, do the things you know you can do. get your confidence back a little bit. And I think that's how they're moving forward with him right now. And that was, you know, the goal he scored the other night, mm-hmm. I think, is an example against the Devils of what's to come for Casey Mittelstadt. Just a gorgeous goal. He basically passed the puck to himself as he split the defense.
Right.
And then went in, and he didn't score on the first shot, but stayed with it and scored on the second shot. And that and the play he made to Pominville was a good one, too. His back was to the play, but yet he still had the hockey sense to be able to know the puck is coming, pick it off, and in one swoop know where Jason Pominville is. And that's a talent. I mean, that's those are the types of things. That's the type of sense you have in a game you can't teach a player. Either you have that kind of a sense during the game or you don't. You coaches can put players in positions all day, but you also have to have a little bit of feel for what's going on out there, and that's what separates the good players from the maybe middling mediocre players.
Paul, this whole Jeff Skinner contract thing, this is new territory here, I think, for us here in Buffalo. At least it has been since 2007, of course, right? I mean, but how do they approach this, and you know, kind of how do you think this whole thing is going to go down? I'm not asking you to predict if he's going to be here next year, but how do you think this gets played out, at least from now until it comes time for everybody to have to really make a decision? Because the more goals he scores, the harder it's going to be, of course. And at the same time, though, there has to be a point of, yeah, we just can't afford that, right? I mean, so this is getting very, very interesting.
Well, when they start talking, which everything I see is might be when this break comes up, where the Sabres have the 5-day bye week and then the All-Star break combined, that seems like maybe when Jason Botto and Don Meehan might really get down to brass tacks. Don Meehan, I'm sure, is going to negotiate like he's got a 55-goal scorer on his hands.
Right.
Now, the most goals Skinner has ever scored in a season is 37. This is the fourth time he has gone over 30 goals. He scored 31 his rookie year, so his rookie year was one of the three times that he had gone over until he did it for the fourth time yesterday. Jason Botterill looks at the stats, and you take his numbers and multiply it over 82 games, he's a 30-goal scorer. You know, his numbers are between 30 and 31. So when he's in the negotiations, he's going to be negotiating for a guy who is a 30-goal scorer, which still is a lot of money. I mean, Evander Kane got a contract of $7 million a year. So it's got to be more than that. But I don't think, you know, if all of a sudden Don Meehan says, well, this guy's going to score 50 goals this year, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, it's going to cost you $9, $10 million if you want to, you know, get him signed. Well, are you going to overpay to tune of $9 or $10 million for a 30-goal scorer when maybe the comfortable place for that would be 7.5 to 8.5 type of a contract? Maybe 8.5 is overpaying a little bit for a 30-goal scorer. I'd have to look it up. But you are going to take away his unrestricted years. Let's face it, you are going to have to overpay a little bit.
And they do have that option. The Sabres are the only team that can offer him the eighth year, I believe it is, right? Can you correct me on that?
Yeah, they're past. They couldn't before, but now that they're past the first, that, you know, they will, they can give him that eighth year. So he's to the age where that's just about okay. I you know, guys who are coming into unrestricted free agents like Carlson at 29 and. No, I don't want to give an eight-year deal to guys who are 29, 30, and then you've got contracts that run until they're 37 or 38, and then at the end of the contract, you're really going, what are we going to do with this for the next 4 years?
Yeah, because the advantage would be, I think, you at least if you have the eighth year, if you give him that extra year of security, maybe he's willing to take a little bit less, right? Because over the life of the deal, he's still making more.
Exactly, and I know he enjoys Buffalo. We talked about it a little bit yesterday on the pregame show. When I got to talk to him about his All-Star nod, he talked about the people in Buffalo, and I said, when did you really realize what the fans in Buffalo were all about? Did you know before? I mean, he's from Toronto. I said, did you know before you got here? He goes, I did some homework and talked to some people I kind of knew, but he said, until I moved in and got in the community and walked around and played hockey here, he goes, no, I don't think I fully understood. I mean, the people from Buffalo outvoted the people from the Mecca of sports in Toronto to to get their guy into the All-Star game. And Riley, for the Leafs, might be playing like the best defenseman in the league the first half of the season. He has had a phenomenal year. But, you know, the Leaf fans weren't able to outdo the Sabre fans, and there are quite a few more Leaf fans than there are Sabre fans.
What do we know about Don Meehan? I know you're familiar with him as far as agent. Like, what type of agent is he? What kind of relationship do the Sabres have with him as far as years past, players maybe? And, you know, is he a guy that's going to basically dig his heels in?
What if I said the name Michael Pekka to you?
Oh, jeez. It's not what I want to hear in this situation. Let's just put it that way.
He was Michael's agent. And whoever was right or wrong, I'm not going to get into that.
For what it's worth, I think Pekka has said since then that, you know, he wished he could play that different.
I think so. Yeah. He wanted to come back to Buffalo after a while, and it just never materialized. He enjoyed his time as a Sabre, and it's up to the player. And I got sidetracked with Skinner. So he's really enjoyed playing here. He enjoys playing with Jack Eichel. He likes his teammates. You know, he's fit in very well with his teammates. He likes the reason that he told the Carolina it was okay to trade him to Buffalo is because of the good young players here led by Jack Eichel. You know, he knows Dahlin was coming here, and, you know, Eichel's here, and you've got some other young players, Mittelstadt, and other guys that are developing right now. So, you know, that's the reason that he said, yeah, Buffalo, I think, would be a desirable destination to come to. So you would think that would play into somewhat into the contract negotiation, too.
More with WGR's Paul Hamilton after this timeout. Welcome back to WGR Sports Talk Saturday. Sal Capaccio here with Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline. You said you think Omark's going to be in goal tonight. We don't know for sure. Like, we'll find out, I guess, a little bit later in the afternoon or what?
Yeah, we talked to Phil around 4:45, but he hasn't veered away from that at all this year. You know, back-to-backs, both goaltenders play. And with the way Omark's been playing, why not? I mean, why would you deviate from that? So I think definitely in... What could go wrong? I mean, Tampa's only been to Buffalo once, and the Sabres won 2-1.
I was going to say what my follow-up to that is, you know, they've actually played this team well. They almost beat them in Tampa as well. They played a really good game that night in Tampa when they ultimately wound up losing, I think, blowing a third-period lead. But
yeah, that was a 5-4 loss, and that's interesting. If you go from that time, and that was on November 29th, the Sabres had just finished beating the Sharks 2 days before for their 10th win in a row.
Yep.
So they walked into Tampa, the number one team in the National Hockey League, by 1 point. Tampa won that game. And including that game, since then, Tampa is 17-1-1.
My God.
For 35 points, and the Sabres are 6-9-4 for 16 points. They have picked up 19 points on the Sabres, and probably everybody else in the league too, since that point where they have gone 17-1-1. They are reaching levels now that maybe have only been seen once in the National Hockey League. I mean, this is probably the best team I've seen in the NHL, at least for the first half season, and I don't know how long. I'm not going to say it's the best team I've ever seen because I've seen the old Oilers and the old Islanders, but it's recently, you know, one of the best hockey teams, especially the way they're performing. And I mean, and the thing is, you look at their team, and you got Kucherov, but Brayton Point is their number two scorer. I think he quietly has become a star in this league. He's got 60 points in 44 games with 28 goals. I mean, he's got 11 more points than Stamkos does. So you got Kucherov, you got Point, you got Stamkos, you got Hedman on the defense. They fill in with nice players like Tyler Johnson and Yanni Gord and JT Miller. Ryan McDonough, the former captain of the New York Rangers, is playing. Matter of fact, they got two former captains of the New York Rangers, Ryan Callahan and Ryan McDonough, that play for this team. In goal, Vasilevsky. And, You know, is it a little bit of a system, the way they play goal? Yeah, but he still has to make the saves. He's got a .925 save percentage.
Right.
And, you know, he still has to come in and make the saves, and he does so. And, you know, he's now an all-star goalie. So they just can come at you so many ways.
And I'm looking. I haven't matched it up with their schedule. It looks to me like he plays every game. I mean, Vasilevsky, they don't rest him that much. He's played January 10th was their last game. It was a couple nights ago he played. He played on the 8th, the 5th, the 3rd, New Year's Eve, December 29th, 27th. You got to go a ways back, I think, for him not to have played.
And he was well rested because he was injured for a while. And
yeah, he missed from November 10th through he missed a month. And then since then, I don't think they might have had one game in here that I'm missing that he did not play.
Yeah, he's a workhorse for them, and I want to see if he played that 2-1 game. No, he didn't. The Sabres have not faced him this year.
All right, so maybe tonight.
He was
tonight
injured for the second game, and it wasn't his turn to play in the first game, so they have not faced him yet this year.
All right, Paul, well, we'll keep track tonight. I know you'll be there, and it will be on WGR here at 7 o'clock, and of course, you can follow Paul at PHAM1717 on Twitter. Have a great afternoon. Enjoy football. You got any picks today? Colts at Chiefs, I should say, and then the night game tonight is Cowboys-Rams. Who you like?
Oh, who did I? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm taping the Iowa State game right now.
Okay.
We started as we were starting to speak, so Iowa State, Kansas State comes first. I some reason feel I'm looking at the Chargers. I think they might win in New England. I really do.
Tomorrow, okay.
Yeah, I got the Chiefs at home against Indy. I got the Rams at home against Dallas. And I like Philadelphia in New Orleans.
I think
now, don't forget, I was 0-4 last week.
Okay, we'll go against whatever you say then. This should be some fun games today. Enjoy your afternoon, Paul. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Thanks a lot to Paul Hamilton, plus my guests, Josh Reed, who came into the studio today, Soren Petro from WHB in Kansas City, Tyler Dunn from Bleacher Report. ESPN Radio is up next, and of course, we have Sabres and Lightning tonight, pregame at 6 on WGR.